Welcome to Built Brave. Driven women sharing their stories to show others what is possible for them. Because we were all born brave. I'm your host, Lo Wentworth, and this is Built Brave. Are you ready? Hey everyone, on this episode, I interview Carly Myers. She is the founder of the Stressless Company, and she has helped hundreds of women and a few brave men across the country take action to reduce stress through coaching. She believes there is no one-size-fits-all when it comes to stress management. And I'm so excited about this episode, guys, because we get real, real quick and go deep because her story starts with a major trauma, witnessing a murder in her home and witnessing her mom being shot and growing up at a young age and how she has managed to heal from that trauma and now teaching others to do the same and learning to not stress about the little things in life that I know we all stress about, myself included. So I'm so excited for this episode and I'm so excited you guys are here. So let us begin. All right, everyone. I'm super excited to introduce the first guest ever for Built Brave, Miss Carly Myers. She is the founder of the Stressless Company, which is extremely perfect, especially in my life right now, talking about stressing less. So I'm really grateful to have you on, and I'm just really excited to see what nuggets of wisdom come out of this. So take it away, Miss Carly.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I think you pretty much summed it up. You know, I own the Stressless Company based out of Philly. We work with people all over the world. But what I really do is I help folks who are overworked, who are overwhelmed or on the verge of burnout, relieve stress so that they can find more joy at work, home, you name it. Stress is something that's taken over. 85% of us have actually experienced high levels of stress in the last month. And this is not like stress where I've lost my keys, right? Like this is hardcore stress. And so I'm really glad that you're having me on the podcast because one of the things that's really important to me is to start spreading awareness because a lot of us don't even know that we're stressed. We're too busy in fight or flight trying to handle what life is throwing our way.
Yeah, most definitely. I can relate to that so much. Fight or flight, high levels of stress. I haven't started meditating again, but you know, workout is the relief reminder. And like you said it perfectly, spreading awareness. I mean, that's just the whole intention of all of this. Like everyone's voice matters, so it deserves to be heard. But going back, let's back up a little bit. Like, why did you find the Stressless Company? Like, what caused you to be like, I see a need, this is what I want to create?
Yeah, so we're going to go real deep, real quick here.
Perfect, that's my favorite.
Yes, good. So I actually ended up founding the Stressless Company because of a personal experience that I had. So when I was about 11 or 12, a man was actually murdered in my house and my mom was shot 3 times. And you know, by the way, my mom is totally okay these days, right? But as a 11, 12-year-old girl, you know, being in the home, experiencing a trauma like that, you know, I experienced high levels of stress, high levels of anxiety, PTSD. I mean, you name it. I experienced the symptoms of it. And for a long time, you know, the thing that really got to me is this jumpiness and night terrors. Like, I was just fight or flight, let's get stuff done, pick yourself up by the bootstraps, go through life, it doesn't stop. And I'd have these night terrors at night, so I wasn't getting quality sleep. And I was really struggling. To the outside world, I was a goody two shoes. There was nothing wrong, right? I was one of those kids that looked around at everything else in my life and thought, I can't be a burden to my family, right? Like, my sister was 5 years older than me, right? She was going to be 16, 17 around then. And she was still, like, not over the fact that my parents were getting a divorce, right? Like, let alone the man in our house, which I guess I should give you some context there. You know, my parents got separated. My mom started dating again. Mm-hmm. My dad, a former correctional officer, is like, ain't nobody going to be around my kids unless I know what their background is, right?
Of course.
And so he asks a couple of friends to to find out what this guy's deal is. Turns out this new boyfriend has an extensive history of domestic violence.
Perfect. So, not so perfect, but.
Yeah. Perfect and sarcastic perfect. But so he lets my mom know. My mom goes back to this guy and she says, you know, they've only been dating like 3 months, like no time. She goes, you know, it's not you, it's me. Of course, she's not like, I heard that you tried to strangle your ex-wife. No. She was like, hey, you know, I didn't realize, like, I started dating too soon after my separation. I didn't realize I wasn't ready. Like, I'm so sorry. It's not you. You're a great guy. But, like, I'm just not ready. Well, on the 3-month anniversary of that breakup, he broke into my childhood home, killed her new boyfriend, and tried to kill her. So that's the context of that situation. You know, my mom being shot, she was shot point blank in the back of her head, in her L5 and her spine and through her arm. And she had a 3% chance of living. She was in medically induced coma. And so as you can imagine, first of all, my sister was not like, she wasn't over the separation and the divorce proceedings yet, like, let alone this like whole traumatic situation.
Right.
And then my dad was technically still married to my mom. So he technically had the right to make all of her medical decisions, right? Should we pull the plug? Should we not pull the plug? What should we do here? What should we not do there? My mom's parents were like fighting with my dad and being like, what, you jerk, like, this is not your, you know, there was so much going on in my family, plus financial concerns, right? Medical bills, everything. And I thought to myself as a kid, I mean, subconsciously, I never made the conscious choice, right? That they've got a lot going on. My sister's struggling, my dad's struggling, everyone else in my, you know, extended family, they're struggling with this. Like, night terrors are the least of the worries right now. Mm-hmm. Jumpiness are the least of the worries. But what was interesting about the way I walked through life is that when I did get advice, it didn't always serve me, right? I constantly heard different pieces of advice. Like, I grew up in a fairly religious family, so I was in church every Sunday. Just pray and it'll all go away, right? Oh my gosh, should I pray? I begged. And there's the other flip side to the coin, which is that when you're a child, at least in Maryland, back in the day when this happened with me, you're required to go see a therapist, right? Thank goodness you're required to go see a therapist after you experience something like this. And whether it was because my parents couldn't afford to continue therapy with my sister and with myself, or because the therapist thought we were fine, right? I was putting on the front of, I got good grades, I'm doing good, like, we're going through life. I didn't end up in long-term therapy, or at least therapy short-term to handle what had just happened. So I learned very quickly at a very young age that the mainstream approaches to managing stress don't always work for us. You know, I was constantly hearing, oh, just meditate, oh, just exercise, oh, just do this. And I'm like, this is some deep stuff. Like, I don't know if I'm just going to the gym is going to solve it, right? And so I learned that those things are incredible. You know, meditation, exercise, you name it. But they oftentimes need to be paired with other techniques and tactics. There is no one-size-fits-all when it comes to stress. And so for about 10 years, I actually really struggled. I had that jumpiness, the night terrors, the anxiety. And then one day I came across creativity, like art making. I started sketching out those feelings that I was feeling, the night terrors that I was having. And slowly but surely, things got better. The night terrors started going away. I started being less jumpy. And then I was like, oh, crazy. This is working. Nobody told me about this. And then I had that moment where I was like, nobody freaking told me about this.
Oh, yes. I know that those moments. You're just like, what the F? Really?
Really? Yeah. Like, really? I thought there were only four or five options mm-hmm. here. And so I spent a few years being upset about it.
I feel you on that one.
And then I realized, oh, I'm supposed to be talking about it.
Mm.
And that's where the Stressless Company came from. Because there is no one size fits all when it comes to stress management. I want to make sure that anybody who's listening to this podcast, to anywhere else that I'm speaking, that if you feel like you've tried everything, just know that the possibilities are actually endless. You haven't tried everything. And by the way, there is, again, no one size fits all. There's some remedy that is perfect for you as an individual that is going to transform your life and lead you to that place of calm, contentment, whatever that beautiful state of mind that you want to be in is.
Yeah, that's beautifully stated, and so many people need to hear. I mean, I know I had my own struggle with, well, what works for me? How do I figure it out? Like, a part of the time I'm like, I'm not an athlete anymore because I'm not competing, when I'm like, wait, what had me survive growing up? It was like, it was art and athletics. Okay, I got to marry the two. And I want to back up to the point of, like, you talked about, like, you couldn't basically lose it in front of your family when all of this is going on with your mom and the divorce and all of that. I mean, I can't even imagine that chaos. But I know, like, in my own story, like, my dad developed fibromyalgia when I was 8. And that was 2 months after my little sister was born. So all of a sudden, my parents were dealing with the chaos of figuring out what happened, because it happened while he was at work. So what does that look legally to me being like, all right, now I'm raising an infant child at 8 years old. And like, to the outside world, yeah, I'm great. I'm awesome. But inside, I was a mess. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Thank you for sharing that. So, like, that just resonated so much. And I know there's someone listening on to this podcast that needed to know that, that they're not alone. But yeah. Absolutely.
I think what's interesting when we're talking about, like, tragedy or trauma mm-hmm. or just, like, crappy life circumstances, we think that they're rare. But what I found in my work over the last 5-6 years is that everybody's experienced something like this, whether it's, you know, like one crazy traumatic event that, mm-hmm. you know, it lasted over like a year or two. Then we have other people who experience, you know, I have like one of my really good friends, she experienced abuse in the home. And that was not, you know, that was not just one event. That was years and years and years mm-hmm. and years. So like everyone, we act like this isn't happening a lot, but I think everyone actually has their own experience with trauma or tragedy, whether we like to admit it or not.
Yeah, so. No, I entirely agree. And like, not one size tragedy fits all. Like, you know, I've gotten to the place like where if we were having this conversation like 5 years ago, I'd be like, oh, you've been through a lot more shit than I have been, Carly. So my stuff isn't that big, when I'm like, but it's mine. I experienced it. It shaped me just like it shapes anyone else, whatever the tragic event is for them. So it's not like trying to like keep up the Joneses to say with the tragedies. Like, no, like we're all the same.
Yeah. What's interesting about that too is this comparison is really, it's just really hard on connection, because I could sit here too. And again, I could sit here and say, oh my goodness. If I had to, from 8 years old to a specific, like for years, be the mom to an infant, like to be the guardian, to be the protect, no way. Like I would, you know, it doesn't matter what the circumstances, we're always going to look at other people's lives, whether it's the grass is always greener or was, mm-hmm. or we're going to say, you know, no way could I have handled that. And the reality is that we're pretty resilient humans. We're really resilient beings. And that regardless of the scenario, regardless of the tragedy, regardless of your life experience, we're resilient.
Mm-hmm. So true. So I'm going to back it up again. I go on tangents all the time. This is like how I have conversations with my friends about things. So you get to the point where you realize you're done being angry and mad at the world about not telling you these things. Like, oh, there was this option that I could do art therapy, essentially, to express myself. And then you're just like, oh, I'm meant to talk about it. So then what was the next steps you started to do when you started stepping into your power and owning your voice on this?
You know, it's funny. I think we all need, especially as entrepreneurs, we need a really crappy job to put us in our place. I think we do.
Facts. Yeah.
So I end up studying art making as a meditative practice. I end up in an arts administration role in an organization, get bullied in the workplace. They say jump, I say how high, you know, it was a really toxic work environment. And I really needed that to say, you mean I went through all of this crap for 15 years of my life, and then I go through 4 years of a college education to only end up in a scenario where I am somebody else's bleepty bleep bleep, you know, like somebody, you know. And I needed that moment to say enough is enough, you know, and to reclaim my power. I'm hoping that those of you who are listening to this podcast have not experienced that moment and make that decision before you get into a crappy job or a crappy situation. But for me, that was the thing that like flipped the switch for me. And, you know, I always thought that I was just going to bring people closer to art, which is going to make them, you know, help them find their peace. And I realized that in that journey too, that art was just my journey. But again, there's no one size fits all. So what is it that, you know, Sue needs, or what is it that John needs, or what is it that, you know, Lori needs? It's not that. And so I'm trying to think of like the first steps that I took. You know, the very first step that I took was to hire a coach, was to say, I know what my mission is and my purpose is, and I know how to teach it, but how do I get my message in front of the world so that the people who need to hear it most, the people who are praying for this, the people who are, you know, wondering why me, can get access to this message.
So you hired your coach.
Oh,
started going from there. So when did like the momentum, like it started clicking for you? Like, I understand like the whole, like a crappy job, it's kind of like the universe kind of like, it's like, it's sometimes you have to learn things from a baseball bat from the universe where you're just like, oh, looking back, you're like, okay, I saw that red flag and that red flag. But then it was here. So you started working with your coach. And then when did you realize like you felt like you had full footing on this? Or what, did you just have that all along?
I mean, I've always had full footing on, not always, let's see. You know, ever since I discovered the thing that worked for me and I got to the point where I felt a sense of peace internally, you know, that was where I had the full footing. In terms of the stressless company, you know, there have been days, I think there's always like, as soon as I made that decision to become a business owner, to launch the stressless company, there was no going back. I think for me, it was literally just a moment of decision. And I say this to folks that I talk to all the time, you know, whether it's a decision to take care of ourselves and, I don't know, journal or go to the gym or make watercolor paintings, whatever. When I hear I'm going to try, I'm like, well, you might as well have decided not to. Try. I mean, it's literally just a decision. There's nothing like try is it's not happening. And so whenever I had the concept of the stressless company, it was just a decision. And at that point I was rooted in the ground, was like, this is, you know, this has to work. There's no option for it to fail. There's no option for this message not to get out there because it's so entrenched in what I believe and what I believe my soul's purpose is.
Yeah, no, that's so true. It sounds like you're just like, I just burnt all the ships, just burnt them. I decided nothing else. Like it was all going to happen. And again, with the try thing, I know I've coached many people on that. I'm like, try? Why are you trying? Like you're either in or you're out. Like I visualize like 1 foot over the crack and the other foot. But like in the past, like one in the future, and the crumbling keeps happening. And it's like, pick a side. But yeah. Okay. So I love that fact though, because like so many women especially start to second guess themselves when they've like know internally, like this is it. Cause then it's like, again, the comparison comes in from other people. So I think that's just beautiful. And really other people really are meant to hear too. Like myself included, about like, there's no trying. You just do.
You just do. Yeah, but it's funny though. And that doubt piece is really important, because whenever when I quit my job, when I put my notice in, mm-hmm. and I like had my first day working for myself, I bike into Center City, Philadelphia from where I live. It's like a 25-30 minute bike ride. So it's not a short bike ride.
Mm-hmm.
But I was not driving into Center City. It just wasn't happening. Anyway, so I bike. I'm like, I'm going to a 7:30 a.m. networking event. I bike the whole way in to Center City, and I forgot my bike lock. All right. And you know, like in Philadelphia, for mm-hmm. those of you who are not from the city, like, you're not leaving your bike out on the street. Like, it's going to be stolen. Like, that's just the reality of Philly. So I get there. Now, here's the crazy thing too. This networking event is in the Pyramid Club. And the Pyramid Club is like a high level, like, business meetings event. So they're like, this is like 52nd floor, like beautiful views of Philadelphia. There's literally a dress code. I could have easily said on my very first day of like being full time for myself that, oh, I tried. Let me just go home. Instead, I had a really interesting conversation with one of the managers of the Pyramid Club to see if I could put my bike in their kitchen, right? And it happened. They put it in their break room. But, you know, that was a decision. I could have said, oh, I tried, but I decided. But the thing about making those decisions, too, is that usually when you make a decision, at least this is proven for me, when I make a decision that is fully in alignment and maybe it's a big decision, like, life just throws stuff at you. Like, mm-hmm. the starter in my car broke. I just quit my job. And I was like, okay, here's $600 to fix my car, $400, $500, $600 first week, you know, my dog gets sick. Like, it's just the universe throws you some things at you when you make that decision. And a lot of people will take that as an opportunity to say, to question themselves. But what I would like for those of you who are listening to say, this means I've made the right decision. And this means that the universe, God, whatever you believe, is making sure that I'm strong enough and I'm resilient enough to make it through.
Mm-hmm. So true. That reminds me, I think it was in Jen Chinchero's, like, You're a Badass Moneymaker. And it was in there about how there was, I don't know if there was a client of hers or whoever, but there was a guy who decided to start his own company. The building he got or purchased started on fire. Mm-hmm. Whatever. He rebuilt it again. Fire. And then again, it was like he had three fires, but he still kept going on. But I think that's also, again, what you're saying, like, the universe, God, whoever people believe in, I identify with the universe, is just throwing it at you also to make sure you're grounded in your decision and aren't going to waver, because there's going to be stuff that comes up, like, no matter what.
Yeah. Also, just like thinking about this Jen Sincero's client, like, mm-hmm. I can't imagine how much insurance money he got. I bet his third location was so much more baller than his first location, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the universe is like, no, like, you, like, that little shack that you were going to build, that's a joke. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, that, like, medium-sized shack you were going to build, that also a joke. Oh, now you have a legitimate retail store, right? Like, we think we can choose. Here's the thing about stress, and I want to point this out, because this mm-hmm. is, we view stress as a bad thing almost always, mm-hmm. right? Like, oh, stress is going to cause heart attacks and strokes and this and that, and it makes me feel bad, and it makes me depressed, and it makes me tired. I mean, all of these things, we hear them every single day. But if that's actually distress, I mean, and we're experiencing chronic distress these days. No, but the thing about stress is that it's actually not bad for us. It's built into our bodies and to the way we function as beings for a reason. And if we actually make the mental shift to view stress as a good thing, it becomes this thing called eustress, which stems from, you know, euphoria. And when we view stress is a good thing, it actually enables our bodies to help us rise to the occasion. So in comparison, you know, if we were to view, so if Jen Sincero's client was to view those fires as a bad thing, right? I mean, he could easily get depressed. He could easily give up. He could easily just stop where he started. And not to mention that, the physical symptoms of his body, his blood vessels would have constricted. His body would have been fighting against itself. He might have gotten sick. He might have headaches. He might be, I mean, all of those symptoms start to show up. Heart attack. But that's one of those things when we experience stressful situations in life and we view it as a bad thing, that's where the tension comes and our bodies start fighting themselves. If we view it literally just a change in our psychology, if we view it as a good thing, our blood vessels actually open up. And what happens is we're able, our blood is actually able to flow through. We're able to focus. We're able to, you know, pick ourselves up by the bootstraps and go in a way that serves us. I think about all these people that are afraid of public speaking. We view it as a bad thing. We view the clamminess in our hands, the heart racing, the change in breath as a bad thing. But if we actually viewed that as to, oh my goodness, my body's serving me. My body's helping me get into focus. My body's helping me stand in my power. My body's helping me whatever. Imagine what the difference in presentations would be.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. It's there to support you. And that just like reminds me of, I read a lot of books too. I think it's Jodi Holler. It's called Fear is My Homeboy. And she was, it's really good. I love it. So anyone read it. She's the great mix of sarcasm and, you know, giving it straight to you about things. But she was watching Simon Sisk, the Start With Why guy, for those of you who don't know, and he was giving a presentation, but he lost his spot where he was.
Is that on the regular TED Talk, or is this like another?
It's another one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I know. I think he would have it come in, stay in, because he was in that moment, was like honest with everyone about like where he was at. Like he lost and just like, give me a minute. And he's like, you know, I think he said something to the fact of like the body's responses of like getting nervous and afraid of public speaking, like the nightmare happening. And he's just like, well, at least I know I'm alive. And I'm like, oh, that's actually really good to know. Like your body's doing these things. That means you're living. So experience them. Don't try to like disassociate and become a robot like so many people do. But yeah.
And in that, I mean, if you haven't, for those of you who are listening, if you haven't checked out his TED Talk about, it's basically based off his book, Start With Why. It's definitely something to check out if you're looking to start a business, right? It's that whole model of why am I doing something versus here's a product, you want to buy it, right? Like start with the why and the culture and not with the product itself.
Yeah, I don't even think, I mean, it's extremely helpful for business owners, people wanting to like put themselves out there. But I think knowing your why for it all, whether it is starting your own business or climbing up the corporate ladder or, you know, whatever, having a family, moving to a different state because you like, why? What's your intention behind it? And being grounded in your intention, like you starting the Stress Less company, it's like you were grounded in that intention. You knew your why and you're like, I'm going to do whatever the hell it takes to make it happen. Ships are burned, decisions made, done.
Yeah. And if you don't know your why, you're not going to be willing to deal with all the crap that comes with entrepreneurship.
No.
Or the crap that comes with life. Goodness.
Anything. Oh no. It would be
easier
like,
to give up if you don't.
Blaming others. I tried. Well, I tried once. Oh yeah. No, I hate that phrase. But anyways, so walk me through when a client comes to you and you're talking about like being in distress versus eustress, you said? Mm-hmm. Yep. Like what's the process you take a client through? Or if someone's just coming, just meeting off the street and you're just like, in this moment, I can help them move their mindset into a more positive one instead of going down like negative Nancy Lane.
Yeah. I should make a sign. Don't go down negative Nancy Lane. no, you know, it's interesting. I do a lot of talks, all over. And one of the things that's really hard to shift is our mindset when we're in fight or flight. Mm-hmm. So what I recommend first, before even getting into the mindset piece, of course, this is going to have a positive effect on the mindset, but what I recommend is engaging in this thing I call creative stress reduction. And so in order for you to figure out what helps you get out of fight or flight and into a state of play, which, by the way, creative stress reduction is an activity that takes your mind from fight or flight and into a state of play. What I recommend is that we do this activity, but first we have to figure out what it is for us as individuals. So I recommend that, you know, you grab a piece of paper, you grab a notebook, and you grab a pen, and you write down 100 things that you love. An extensive list, like everything that you love. You know, playing with your dog, eating cookie dough, drinking wine, hanging with friends, like walking in the park, like whatever you love, and just write out that list, extensive. And if you have trouble remembering what you love, go back to your childhood. What did you love doing as a kid? I love jumping on my trampoline. Like, I had a little trampoline. It was one of my favorite things. Pogo stick. Loved it. Because I like to jump, right? And those were on my list. Go back to your childhood. What did you love when you were a kid? The second thing that I would recommend, once you have that list of 100 things, is to go back and cross off anything that would not serve you if you did it every single time you were stressed, right? Mm. So, like, my advice is cookie dough. I love it. It's amazing. If I ate cookie dough every single time I was stressed, I'd probably be quite a large woman, and I would feel bloated, and I would feel gross, and I'd probably be sick with salmonella by now, right? Same thing with, you know yourself, with a glass of wine. I had someone bring up video games. 30 minutes, 20 minutes of video games are great. 4 hours till, you know, staying up till 4 a.m., you tell me. Go back through, know yourself, and cross out all the things. If you did it every single time, it wouldn't serve you. And I do want to point out one thing here. We're not having a lot of conversations about exercise addiction right now. Know yourself here too. Are you the type of person that's going to damage your body, cross that line? And if you are, this is not going to be the activity that works for you. It's good and healthy to do in moderation. So know what you can do in moderation. Once you have that list, with all the crossed out stuff, you're going to have some things left over. Circle the top three things that excite you the most. Like, the things that you're like, I cannot wait to do this. This sounds so fun. I'm going to take my dog to the dog park. We're going to run around. You know, like, whatever you're really excited to do. And now, here's an important thing too. If you're feeling really stressed at work, if you're in a lifestyle right now where you don't have the time, like, you're like, Carly, take a dog to a dog park, like, I don't have time for that. If you're in that scenario, make sure that you're circling things that excite you that fit into your time, right? So if you're like, I love doodling, I can do that while I wait for the bus or while I'm waiting for my coffee to come, you know, like, whatever, then those are the things that I would encourage you to go for first. But so once you have those things circled, then we go to this point where we go back to Nike and we're like, yeah, just do it. Mm-hmm. It's take action. And if you're hearing this and you're saying, okay, well, Carly, like, great, that's real helpful. Thanks. Just do it. Easier said than done. Then I would encourage you to explore Mel Robbins' 5-second rule. And this rule is all about literally basically following the lead of a like NASA rocket, like a spaceship, and launching yourself into action, counting backwards from five. By the way, it doesn't work if you count upward, right? Because you're just like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, wait till tomorrow, right? Mm-hmm. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and physically launch yourself into action. So physically take your dog to the dog park, or physically put it on your calendar if you're at work and you can't do it right now. Put it on your calendar for when you get home. Just whatever you do, take those items and physically move yourself into action. Now, the next thing that I would recommend in terms of finding this creative stress reduction technique is for you to allow yourself the space to explore, in terms of, like, okay, so you tried doodling and it turns out you never do it. Turns out, like, you can't stand doodling anymore. You thought you liked it, but you hate it. That's okay. Abandon what works. Let go of it. It's not serving you. Move on to what does serve you. Go back to your list. Go to the next thing you circled. Really, what we oftentimes get stuck in, especially in stress reduction, is we're like, well, meditation used to work for me, or exercise used to work for me. Or I had one guy tell me, creating content on social media used to work for me. And I'm like, what a, you know what? I'll give it to you. But
okay.
it doesn't anymore. Mm-hmm. At some point it became a job. At some point it felt like an obligation. And for you to get out of fight or flight into a state of play, it can't feel like an obligation or a job. It has to be something that excites you.
Right. It has to be something fun. And I think you also, people have to give themselves permission to bring back like that childhood state that they were in. Like when you're a child, you're always like trying new things, different things. And if it doesn't interest you, you're on to the next. Mm-hmm. And so I think that also is like, again, like we talked about comparison, like people get into that rut. Well, it serves this person, so then it serves me, right? Mm-hmm. When that's not really the fact of it all. Like sometimes they're like, you talk about exercise addiction. And I really do think like there is an epidemic going on with that too, especially with like social media and like all of the fitness models and all of that. But it's just like, there are points where I sit in my body and I'm like, does this actually serve me? Like, mm-hmm. Where's my body at right now? Oh, I only got like 6 hours of sleep. I haven't been really eating. Like, is it worth getting injured or is it just worth me taking a rest day and calling it good and starting mm-hmm. over? Or taking a time out of like, you know, maybe I don't do the HIIT workouts. Maybe I just go to do yoga for a period of time. But yeah, I think that also goes with like the disconnect of the body too, as well.
Yeah.
With things.
Yeah. And you know, with the whole piece of exercise addiction, we have to be, and not even just exercise as, mm-hmm. and this can be applied to any of the creative stress reductions you would choose. I mean, everything can be good for you in moderation. So, you know, we have to know the difference between self-sabotage and self-care.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, self-sabotage can be over-exercising, but it can also be going home and watching Netflix every single night instead of going to the gym or
that is true. Your bodies,
right? So I just want to be clear that there's this middle ground with everything. I mean, green beans are great for you, but if you don't eat your greens at all, then you're probably low on fiber or whatever mm-hmm. else. I'm not a nutritionist, right? But if you eat too many, if you eat a truckload of green beans, you're going to feel like crap.
Mm-hmm.
Everything in moderation. And the other thing that I didn't say that I really want to point out is that mm-hmm. this 5-second rule by Mel Robbins is really important when it comes to taking action. First of all, if you thought the thought, that's your subconscious telling you should take that action. So if you're like, oh yeah, Carly talked about a pogo stick. Like, yeah, I should do that. Whatever. Like whatever mm-hmm. comes to you, that's your subconscious being like, yeah, that's a good idea. But the problem is when we get in our heads and we say, yeah, but that's childish, or yeah, but who has time for that? Or yeah, but I should be working, or yeah, but anytime you hear, yeah, but you know, you're like in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So the 5-second rule is really about cutting out all of that noise and helping you take action. So you have that thought and you're like, I'm going to jump on a pogo stick. I hope you have one in your garage, right? But like, I'm going to jump on one. And then you go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, move in action. Mm-hmm. When you do that, you cut out all of those thoughts that are that have for the past 10 years, past 5 years, I don't know how many years you've been alive, mm-hmm. right? That have prevented you from taking action to take care of it.
It's true. It's getting into that motion. There's so many times people get like stuck in analysis paralysis about like thinking about like, what would you think? Like, okay, if you don't have the pogo stick in your garage, there's this thing called Amazon Prime.
Yep. Like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, order that stuff, right?
Ordered. Like it's just done. I know I do that sometimes. Like there's been a couple books I recently ordered because I was trying to find like a picture to post on Instagram. And I'm like, I have screenshotted these two books 3 separate times each. Okay, ordered now, done. But yeah, no, it's all like getting into that action. And like what you said, like figuring it out, like finding the balance. I think also people have to feel the extremes on both sides to be in order to find their own balance. Because again, like as much as we would want, you know, telling people here, if you get those like little red flags that maybe you should leave your job and jump ship and create your own company before the baseball bat comes from the universe, that it's like also how would you know what your middle is too? Mm-hmm. So
yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I have I always like to imagine that baseball bat from the universe is like pink and glittery. So like when it's going through the air, the glitter is like, it's just like, here you go. It's a loving, really aggressive tap. But I mean, if I wouldn't have
You have a better imagery on that than I do. The baseball bat is like what? Something from Walking Dead that like Negan, I don't watch Walking Dead anymore, but that's like wrapped in barbed wire, the classic like baseball bat, like heavy. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting. I will adopt the pink glittery baseball bat. Just lovingly smacking me. Okay. Thank you for that image.
I mean, it's still painful, but it is glamorous.
Oh, it's so much better. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's funny though. Like I will share my story. You know, like I shared my story at the beginning of this podcast, and I'll share being bullied in the workplace, and I'll share, you know, the stuff that I've gone through, and, you know, people will come back and they'll say, oh my goodness, Carly, I'm so sorry that you went through that. It must have been so hard. And I look them dead in the eyes and I say, I'm not.
Because you shouldn't.
If I was sorry that this happened, first of all, a man would have died in vain.
Mm.
Because if I didn't learn from that lesson, what was the point? If the people involved in that trauma, tragedy, didn't learn from that lesson and transform their lives as a result, I mean, shame on us. And I certainly, for one, wouldn't have been able, I wouldn't have, had I not had that 10 years of struggle, I would not be here today teaching and talking about the importance of how we need to be managing our stress. You know, I wouldn't be here. Same with workplace bullying. If I hadn't have had that experience, I would have never learned my worth.
So true.
So when we think about that baseball bat, we can view it as, oh my God, that's so, or oh my goodness, that's so horrible. That's, oh, poor, poor, pitiful her or me or whoever. But thank goodness that happened to me, to you, to everyone who's listening. Whatever you've gone through, there's a reason. And if you don't see it right now, that's okay. The universe will probably, maybe not a bat again, they'll sprinkle some glitter on you.
Some fairy dust.
Yeah, it'll come.
Yeah, no, that's so true about like not being sorry. I view it as like, I don't regret anything in my life. Like, because part of me is like, well, I did it. I did it for a reason, or it happened for a reason, whatever. But that would be me like regretting a part of me, mm-hmm. like having the ex, have getting tattoos, going on the trips or whatever it may be. Like, why would I want to even regret any part of me for that? And so that's like, again, like it goes with like the self-worth and like people also coming up to you being like, I'm so sorry you went through that. I'm like, how many times have we heard like life doesn't give you anything? Like, it's not rainbows and candies and all of that. And so like, that's just crazy to me to think. But also going back to my train of thought on that, like it just reminds me of a time when I was in law school, my first semester, right after midterms. Like, there's a bunch of women in the bathroom in between classes, and one of them was vulnerable enough and courageous enough to be like, do you guys just, you know, cry every day? Because like law school is stressful, man. And I every single woman in that bathroom was like, oh my God, you too? And it's just like, I want more of those moments of being like, I'm not sorry you went through this. I'm like, oh my God, thank God someone else.
Yeah. You know, I just want to share a stat that came to mind when you shared that. I recently did a talk for Temple Law here in Philly to a bunch of practicing lawyers who are coming back to get their certifications because mm-hmm. they're high achievers and really dedicated to their practice. And in preparation for this talk, I was doing some research on, you know, the stresses that lawyers experience. And I came across this horrifying stat, which is that 1 in 4 lawyers, I believe it's 1 in 4. I'm pretty sure, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure it's 1 in 4 lawyers commit suicide.
Oh yeah, I don't doubt it. Like, even going through like law school and all of that, like, I understood the term play hard, work hard, and then play harder. Like, yeah. There are so many things I saw in law school that students did, and like, or like attorneys, we'd have CLEs, continuing education, because it's required if you're a practicing attorney to keep your license, to continue your education. And some of them, the attorneys would be talking about like, I became an alcoholic because of this,
mm-hmm.
or there's some other drug addiction because of this. And it's just like horrific to see. And you know, this whole legal profession is meant to serve people, but it became this rat race of really serving no one and essentially slowly killing yourself is what I see. And that's my perspective of it all.
Yeah, I think, you know, and that reminds me of the other stat that I found, and I don't know the number, so I'm not even going to try to fluff this one. But, you know, again, there's a tendency towards addiction. But here's the thing about this that I want to be really clear about is that in professions like this, and especially in service professions, we're in professions like lawyer, like being a lawyer, we're required to detach. And if at some point we see so much trauma that we have to detach to survive.
Very true. And,
you know, it's not just lawyers. It's beyond that. I mean, I see people every day that are detaching from their emotions and wonder, like, what is going on with me? Why do I have heartburn? Why do I have a headache? Why do I feel this, you know, whatever the symptom is in my body? Why can't I sleep? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we detach from our emotions, our body still feels it. I mean, there's a book about trauma called The Body Keeps the Score. I mean, it's true. And so if you feel like you're listening to this and you are experiencing symptoms, maybe some of the symptoms that I've mentioned, lack of motivation, irritation, inability to get sleep, you know, you name it, you can Google stress symptoms, right? In the body, there may be some detachment that's happening. And the only way that we can address those symptoms and maybe that chronic pain or whatever's going on is to really stop detaching. See your stressors for what they are and start addressing them, right? This is something funny that I hear all the time as the owner of the Stressless Company. People go, oh, you're the owner of the Stressless Company. So you're like a spa or like a masseuse. And I'm like, sure. All right. I mean, okay. Maybe one day I'll hire a masseuse and then have a massage practice. But you know, if you're worried about money, is a massage going to solve your problems? If you're being bullied at work, is that going to solve your problems? Is that going to help you stress less? If you're in a bad relationship, is that going to make your stress go away? Getting a massage? No. We have to look at our stressors and really address them. If it's money, we got to figure out a plan to make more money so that this distress this month doesn't become distress for 5-10 years, chronic distress. Same thing with relationships. Same thing. So, you know, I want for us to get out of our heads. Yes, treat yourself, please. No, let's keep that in our minds. Treat yourself. Like, right, thank you, Parks and Rec. You know, treat yourself.
This is self-care. Get that massage you have been putting off getting, or that facial, or whatever, or getting your nails done. Like, that's self-care. It becomes self-sabotage when you avoid. You use it as an avoidance tool.
It's not like, oh, I'm feeling depressed. Oh, I'll go get my nails done. Check. Mm-mm. No. What we need to stop doing is thinking that getting a massage, getting our nails done, buying that, you know, doing that retail therapy is going to replace the real actions that we need to take to reduce stress. And so that's what I do as a coach. You know, I have different different programs and things. You know, of course we're getting out of fight or flight. Of course we're doing that creative stress reduction so we can get into that state of play so we can think clearer. But at the end of the day, we're dealing with these tough topics so that we can actually move beyond stress and enjoy our lives.
Oh, so true. Oh man. Well, it's getting close to the time and I want to be mindful of that. So first off, thank you so much, Carly, for coming on. Like, this has been very much what I needed. And I know like the audience will just love it too, stressing less and all of that. So I just have a few final questions for you. First, where can they find you?
So you can find me just about anywhere on social at The Stressless Co. And you can find me at my website at stresslessco.com.
Okay. And what social media platform do you hang out the most on?
I love Insta.
Okay. Insta. Yeah. So I love it too. What's a like resource you suggest anyone? So it could be a book, podcast, an exercise you've seen someone do, just like anything that's supported you in your journey that could support someone else.
So there's two things. So the first thing is if you follow me on Instagram, check out the Stress Less Show because we're addressing all of those stress triggers and those roots to help you, like job pressure, relationships, money, you name it, we're talking about it. And then the second thing is, if you feel like you're one of those people that's emotionally detaching, check out this book called Emotional Freedom by Judith Orloff. It is, I like to call it the Bible of emotions and what to do about it. If you're feeling sad, here's what we should do. If you're feeling happy, here's what you should do. If you're feeling weird or jealous, you know, like, she addresses every single emotion, every single thing that we might experience on in this abstract emotional side, and helps you handle it. Definitely check it out if you haven't already.
What was the book again?
Judith Orloff's Emotional Freedom.
Emotional Freedom. Okay. I'm going to add that to my list.
It's a good one.
Okay. So what has been the bravest moment of your life so far?
You know, I always think, you know, there's meditations that tell you, like, remember the times that you've overcome things. And there's two moments. Mm-hmm. The first moment is the day I put in my notice to go full time. That was terrifying. I'm so glad I did that. It was courageous. And the second moment is a moment that I think most people wouldn't credit in their own lives as much. I had a moment in a emotionally abusive relationship a few years ago where a man asked me to change who I was.
Oof.
He said, I wanted you to be more feminine. I want you to be more this. I want you to be more that. Very masculine man, very set in his ways. And he fully expected me to say, oh, I'll do anything, you know? And instead, in that conversation, so I said, I can't change to be who you want me to be. This is who I am, and this is who I'm meant to be. And I walked away from that relationship with the cleanest cut I had ever done in my entire life. And that was one of the bravest moments of my life. And I have to tell you, another self-worth moment that made me feel powerful, that made me feel I was on track, and made me, like, to this day, I get goosebumps about who that woman was when she was sitting across from that man. She was badass.
That's amazing. And yeah, there's so many, when we look back, so many of those, like, little moments that actually have the biggest ripple effect on them. It's not always, you know, you could have said the murder that happened when I was younger or whatever it could be, but no, it was both self-worth moments for you taking back your power, which I think is really beautiful and the bravest thing anyone can ever do.
Thank you. So
you're welcome. Just have one final question for you. Okay. What does brave mean to you?
Ooh, brave means that you feel the fear and you do it anyway. It means that to you, it's not going to feel brave. It's not going to feel courageous. But you know it's the right move for you, and you're going to keep on trucking. You're going to keep on going.
Well stated. I love it. Again, thank you so much, Carly. I was so glad to have you on. It's the first podcast talking about stressing less, like everyone needs it. And, you know, really excited to see what you create and how you change the world.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been really fun.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Built Brave. If you love this episode, heck, if you like this episode, please head on over, give it a rate, review, subscribe, like, shout it out on your social media with your major takeaways and what you loved about the episode. And as always, tag me in that at Lo Wentworth, because I love hearing what you guys got out of the episodes. And until next time, remember, you've always been brave.